Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 36 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and my pal Sean Orford. Hi, Sean.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. You okay?
Good, good. This looks like a first hit wonder, this.
We're getting there so far, yeah. It's just the two of us this week, no Ree.
Yeah, it was good last week with Ree.
I'm sorry to report, apart from that slight little incident with the water versus laptop.
Yeah, it was a bit interesting that, wasn't it? I feel a bit guilty about that because over the last year or so, as we were preparing for podcasts and starting, and we were talking about how it would be good to have her on board doing stuff.
Yeah.
And finally getting her to do it, but she was really nervous doing it.
Yeah.
And I felt a bit bad because I think that I kind of coerced her a bit into coming on and doing it. And then in her nervousness, she knocked the glass of water all over her beautiful white MacBook, which was the love of her life.
But no more.
There's a computer angel, a guy called Chris from MSDL at the Wirral Business Centre. So give him a shout out. And he's saved her hard drive and copied everything. She's okay on the hard drive. She's got all the information. It now has to go to Apple.
Yeah.
You have to do the deep surgery.
Do their thing.
Take it apart. But that it's funny how we get attached to things, but I know that laptop as an object is really important to her for what it is, but also for what it looks like. It's the old white unibody MacBook, which is very different to the modern.
Yeah, you can look at those now, can you? I've got one of the shiny silver ones, but
So I really hope that Apple can perform the magic and put it back together for her.
I'm sure they'll sort it out.
Yeah, and then we'll persuade her to do another podcast.
Yes,
but there'll be no water, no anything.
If you want to re-back on the show, We'll set up a petition or something like that. Once it gets to 100,000 signatures. We'll get questions asked in Parliament and all sorts. When's Ree coming back on the Self-Help Podcast? This week we're chatting about passion, something that all of us have in various quantities, some more than others, but we'll...
We're talking in this sense about life passion rather than love passion.
Yes, excuse me.
Or lust passion,
That's right.
Yeah.
Or that kind of Italian passion.
And not passion fruit.
Yeah. before we come to that, I just want to quickly mention a review. Whoopee, on iTunes. Thank you to Adam Lightfoot3. He's given us 5 stars. I found this podcast by chance when browsing iTunes for a self-help podcast. Hey, the name works.
Yes, right, yeah.
People can find us.
That was good.
That was a good call by me. And this is exactly what I was looking for. Interesting topics discussed by people who know what they're talking about. In a way which is fun, engaging and encouraging. Thanks, guys. This is a fantastic show and I'll be listening regularly. Thank you, Adam.
Yeah, hi, Adam.
Nice to have you on board, Adam. Good
enjoy
stuff.
This one, yeah.
Appreciate that. Before we get started on this week, just what have you been up to, Sean, apart from rescuing that laptop?
My main thing is I'm back running again. My leg works.
I thought I could feel the ground shaking.
My grade 2 tear in my calf has healed itself, and I've done a couple of 3.5K runs. So I'm heading back to my 5K.
With our trainer friend, Conrad?
Yeah, he's a good guy. There aren't enough hours in the day. I wish I could spend more time with him, but I managed to grab an hour a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we invented the day, 24 hours a day was a really bad move. It should have been 36. There's just not enough time.
Are there any planets out there that we could go and maybe colonise?
Yeah, there must be, mustn't there?
Longer days.
We're going to a new planet,
Interestingly, I think it's Venus. I found this quote, this info last week. A day on Venus is longer than a year.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I told that to my wife and she's like, how is that? it's quite interesting, that.
Yeah. Does that mean that
is that a long enough day for you?
Yeah, I could do with that. I could probably fit everything in then.
Although Venus is the closest, or is that Mercury's closest?
No, Mercury's the closest. Yeah, Venus is further out.
Yeah, but the year is shorter. So you'll have a longer day, but a shorter year. Yeah.
That means you grow old quicker.
I don't know.
You'll have to work that out,
Yeah, it's the same that for a while. I'll go and think about that later. Have a good week too. I've got a couple of new additions to the family. You met them this morning, got some fish.
Yeah, they're lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got William's first pets. We've got a couple of little tropical fish in a tank. One of them is called Sean.
Yes, perfect. It's the best looking fish in the tank.
My son has a bit of an obsession with you, even though he's not really met you that many times.
We have this odd connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he thinks you come here every day to work with me. It's not just once a week, innit?
Yeah. Just feels like every day.
Every time he leaves for nursery, it's like, see you later, Will. Yeah. Working? Sean? I'm like, yeah, I'm working with Sean today. Funny. So, yeah. Sean and Alan are two fish. Welcome to the world.
So, who's Alan?
Alan's my go-karting pal. That's his other obsession.
Right.
Yeah. Alan, he loves saying Alan and Sean.
Yeah. I wonder what the connections are. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Funny, innit?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a cool little week. And I've also had an interesting knock at the door yesterday. A couple of nice older chaps trying to spread the good word of the gospel. They were Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah, praise the Lord.
So, I didn't invite them in, I must say, because I was kind of up against it with some deadlines. But I had a nice little chat with them. Kind of interesting getting other people's perspective on life.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wonder how many people shut the door in their face.
Yeah, I know. I felt like asking them that.
Yeah. But you're too busy shutting the door.
Yeah, sometimes you get lost.
Yeah. I think that feeds into our topic, because those guys that are out doing that kind of work, they don't get any material gain.
Nope.
We assume that they get a better seat in heaven, maybe. I don't know what the deal is. But they're out doing what they feel passionate about. And that's what we're talking about today, really, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. That's a nice little segue, Sean. Let's move on. Our topic of the week is passion. And this was triggered by an email. We love getting emails from our listeners. And a listener of ours called Kevin, it was Adam who reviewed, sorry. Listener of ours called Kevin sent us quite a lengthy, fascinating email, really. He really opened up, basically saying how he's at a certain point in his life where he's stuck in a job where he doesn't really enjoy it all that much. He's got this passion outside of work for photography, which he'd like to do a lot more of and make a living from, I think. But obviously, as is the case for many people, you've got bills to pay, got some debts to clear, you've got a family to provide for. I think he said he had a wife and child who wife stays is a mum at home, which is a big job in itself, of course. And he feels a bit trapped, I think. The good news is he's only 30. He mentioned his age. He's only 30, so there's plenty of time to sort things out, hey?
It's, that whole kind of age thing is very relative, isn't it? I was working with a guy a few weeks ago who was 44 and was telling me how bad he felt because he felt so old and his kind of life was coming to an end and he hasn't fulfilled himself in that time.
Gee whiz.
And yet the biggest level of business startups is in the over 60s, over 65s.
Really?
People that are retiring, that are going and putting their money into starting something.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man, never too late. I love hearing stories about guys like, I think Ricky Gervais is the one that always stands out for me. He's obviously made it big time now in both sides of the Atlantic. Huge comedian and got TV shows and all films and all sorts. I think when he launched The Office in the UK, I think he was like 36, 37, 38, something like that.
Yeah.
And he'd been toiling away, working in an office, and on the side writing these scripts and bits for comedy. And then something clicked, at a point where a lot of people think is kind of too late. It's too late to...
Is that him finding his passion?
Yeah. Big time.
Think about people like Leona Lewis, who was like an office girl, and suddenly now she's kind of a headline singer. Amazing.
I don't think there's like an X Factor equivalent for photographers, sadly. Okay, but what makes you passionate, Sean? How do you find your passion?
My passion is people. That's what it is. It's people and the unfolding development of people. I just love working with people who... maybe are burdened with emotional or mental or, whatever problems that are weighing them down, and watching them, it's like watching a flower opening in the spring. It's like amazing when you see people get it and they move from that sleepy state to the waking state. It's like the sun's come out and the lights come on. And that's just such an amazing thing to see.
Yeah,
people say to me, how on earth do you do your job? You work with so many miserable, depressed, suicidal people. kind of stuff. But I don't see that. What I see is people going out the door, smiling, waving goodbye, and saying, thanks, Sean, that was really good, can't thank you enough. And then most people say, like, and I hope I never see you again, ha ha, like as if like no one's ever said it before. But I kind of know what they mean. It's like, yeah, they've done it, and they need to go and get on with it, and that's cool, it's good. So that's my passion, and my passion in that sense is fulfilled every day. You know, it's a real joy to do what I do.
When do you get like sad when people you don't see people again, or do you kind of think, how lovely they've gone off and they've sorted it all?
It's quite odd sometimes. The most I've ever worked with somebody is I worked with a client virtually every week for about 15 years, who had a horrendous childhood. And it just took so long to work stuff out. And I did say there will come a point where you'll say to me, no, I've finished now. And then we got to a point in the 15th year where we started to slip to every other week and then every month. And then in the end they said to me, no, I'm ready to go now. And I've never, ever seen them from that day onwards or never heard from them. And that was really odd because we'd done this work together, which was like kind of rebuilding a life, rebuilding a shattered life. And in analytical work, the kind of work we were doing, you talk about reparenting. You become the parent for a while, and then the person learns to detach, and off they go. They leave. Yeah. They leave home. Yeah. But it's quite odd when you have that 15 level.
15 years, man. Wow. Yeah,
when you have that level of a relationship, and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is great in lots of ways, but it's quite odd in others.
Well, you mentioned 15 years there, and Kevin in his email actually mentioned that number too, because he said it was kind of, life's been kind of, well, life's taken him along with it for 10 to 15 years he's been doing this job, which isn't all that fulfilling for him. But it sounds like he's getting close to that point, so he's been working for 10 to 15 years himself.
Yeah.
It may not seem like it, but he's getting there to that point now.
If you think, most of us do what we do because we're on a default setting. We're doing what we were told. Maybe we were good at something at school and someone said, oh, you need to do this. Or we did what our parents wanted to do, whatever we're doing, so that we start to play out these things either for the family or the culture or whatever, for the teacher. And it's only later on that we wake up and think, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this for? Because it's not my passion. It's someone else's passion or someone else's idea.
Yeah, that's the Steve Jobs line, isn't it, from his commencement speech he did. Don't live out other people's dreams, you've got to live out your own.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that was another thing, Kev's email. I call you Kev, I'm sure he doesn't mind.
Yeah, hi Kev.
Yeah, we go way back, me and Kev. advice that he was given as a youngster was, knuckle down, get a job that pays well, and here he is, 10, 15 years on. Was something slightly missing from his life?
Yeah, and I think one of the keys in that is that he alludes to is that his family, in a wider sense, not just his immediate family, have expectations of him. And if he changes what he's doing, does that affect their expectations and perhaps the value that they put on him?
Yeah.
And that is a hugely difficult issue when we are bound by our culture or our religion or our family or whatever. And rather than being able to look at who am I, how can I express who I am in a way that's fulfilling for me?
Yeah.
I think you and I are very lucky people in the sense that to a large extent we faced up to this and we're in the process of trying to create more fulfillment for ourselves by doing the work that we do and doing that consciously rather than being on someone else's default setting of what we should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, both of us have commitments which to do with family and, mortgages and all that kind of stuff, which are real. But within that, there's the issue about, okay, how are we fulfilling ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure not every day we both go to bed, nor do we go to bed together. But thinking, wow, that was amazing. There's days when it's like, oh, dear, that was just a real tough day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Of course.
But that's okay. That's good.
Yeah. Well, I guess my situation is similar-ish to Kevin, because I was in a job designing, and that was always my kind of path in life. It was the creative side of things, but I wasn't the job I had wasn't all that fulfilling in terms of creativity, and I didn't have much free rein to do things. And I'd have ideas, and I'd take them to the boss, and he'd be like, "Nah." So I engineered my way out and went it alone with a business partner, doing photography. Funnily enough, I do design; he does photography. And together we are Dupe Creative, and he does his thing. So go have a look at the WOW website and have a chat with Matt if you want about his more commercial photography, but he'll have some tips for you for sure. But interestingly, like, I kind of originally went it alone because I wanted to do, for a number of reasons, but more because I wanted more creative freedom. And since I've been self-employed, which is nearly 6 years now, I don't think I actually spend that much of my time designing. I think probably 75% of my time is just keeping people happy, sending emails, doing the books, and networking and trying to get more work in. The actual design work is kind of the bit at the end that kind of do.
So, are you fulfilling your passion?
I wasn't sure at first, but I think I am now, because I like just chatting to people and kind of trying to figure out how I'm going to solve their problem or how I'm going to help grow their business, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and I like figuring that out, and then the last bit, actually doing the work, that's easy, you know.
Yeah,
it's interesting. So that's not a warning, but have a chat with. There'll be loads of people in your potential industry photography that are working nearby you, and follow them online and give them a call and just get some advice about how it is for them working at it full time, because it may be that you know what your passion is, but doing it all day every day could it kill the passion? I don't know.
It depends on what it is, doesn't it? Sometimes when we have a hobby that we enjoy doing a bit, and we imagine if we were doing this all the time, we'd feel really good. And sometimes we haven't checked that out properly, and it isn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're saying very clearly that the originating passion is to do the design work, but in the reality of breaking free to do the design work, that's only a small part of your time. The rest of your time is doing other stuff.
Yep.
And for other people, that may be a frustrating thing. Mm-hmm. One of the things in my world is, because my world is full of people, my passion is people, all I've got to do is open the door and there's people there. it's always a joke with Ri, is that if we're stood in a queue somewhere, by the time we get to the till, I know everybody in the queue, and I've had conversations with people because I can't help it. I just love people. so that, from my point of view, there's an inexhaustible source. My resources are continuous.
Yeah,
which is good. I love that. It's great. And everyone has a story to tell.
And why lead a passionate life, eh, Sean?
Well, the issues about motivation, about health, well-being, are about having something to get out of bed for. And I know too many people that wake up in the morning and don't want to get out of bed.
Yep. You
know, because they don't want to go and do what it is that they have set up for themselves. They may not see it like that. They'd say, I don't like the hand that life's dealt me. You know, that kind of stuff, which is externalising the issue, because if we don't own it, we can't change it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and anybody can achieve the things that they desire if they do certain things in certain ways, yeah, which is all what living the present is about.
Yes.
Yeah, but the thing that Kevin points out, and it's a good issue, this, is that what I don't really know what I want to do. There's that feeling in it, you know. I know I like this photography thing, but I don't know whether this is my passion. And how do you get from a point where I don't like what I'm doing, but I know I want to do something, but I don't know what it is? And that's where lots of people are.
Yeah.
And don't know what to do. Yeah. And the classic would be, you know, someone wins the lotto, and they do the classic. They pay the mortgage off and buy a new house, they get a new car, they look after people around them, go on a holiday. What do they do then? Don't know. Mm-hmm. Got nothing to do. And then their lives fall apart and they have a million problems.
Yep.
Because the issue is that the money needs to be the result of what you do rather than an end in itself. It needs to be a byproduct. And we focus on the dosh as opposed to focusing on the fulfillment and the passion.
I like it when when sometimes they interview, or they do a press conference for the people that have won, like, hundreds of millions or whatever. And it's like, you know, Stephen Beryl from Ipswich or whatever, and they've just won 50 million quid. And they ask one or both of them what they're going to do, whether they're going to quit the job. And, you know, Beryl works down at Sainsbury's part-time. And she's like, no, I'm going to carry on working there. I like it when they say that, you know, because they like the people they work with and they enjoy.
The problem with that is very often the people that they work with don't like them because they've won the money.
Well.
Yeah, I was in one of the trusts I worked in, there were six nurses that they got 1.2 million each, and four of them retired and cleared off. and two of them stayed at work. And you'd think that their colleagues would be going, oh, you know, well done, Gladys, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. And not they, but they were saying some things like, why are you still here? There are other people that need this job. You don't need the money. It was all that kind of stuff. And when I spoke to them, and this is a passion issue, both of the nurses said to me, I came into nursing because I wanted to be a nurse. I wanted to care for you. It's my passion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just because I won the money, that's great. It means I can do it in comfort, but I don't want to change what I do in my life because that's my life.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's what I mean about it. If anything that you're doing at the moment is different, if someone gave you a load of money, you know, you'd say, no, I'm going to go and do something else. You're actually doing the wrong thing with your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if the answer to the question of what would you do if I gave you £1 million or £10 million, and maybe that this is a Kevin issue, is looking at it in terms of, if I had the resources, what would I do? Because then you're starting to contact your passion, starting to get in there. I mean, my thing is purely about, I do things that make me feel good.
Yep.
That's what my life's about. And working with people makes me feel good. Playing music makes me feel good. Writing books makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love my wife, I love my family, I love my house. You know what I mean? The things that I'm involved in.
Your iPad?
I love my iPad and my iPads. I have two.
Oh.
I have a collection. but it's from that point of view, I do things that I love.
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you do things... Are there things that you do in your life that you don't love?
Blimey. Not that I can think of the top of my head. I kind of do what I want. I'm pretty honest about stuff.
Yeah.
I go where I want, and I do have the freedom where, you know, I can do what, you know, I'm not a 9-to-5 guy. I've got a lot of work on the go and deadlines, but I can always just fire an email off to a client and say, look, this is going to be a couple of days later than I said, or whatever, so I can just have a morning off. Or my dad's retired now, so he lives quite nearby, so he's a loose end quite often, so I want to go and hang out with him for an afternoon, have a cup of coffee with him. I can do that. So
we need to get him working if he's retired and he's got time on his hands.
Yeah, he's still listening to this show, so that was his plan actually. He was going to take a few months off because he worked in quite a high pressure job in retail.
Yeah,
and he'd had enough, and he got out before Christmas because he couldn't stand another manic Christmas in retail.
Yeah.
But his plan was to take a few months off, just kind of de-stress, and then get a part-time gig.
So,
I was I was asking him over Christmas about whether he was going to get a CV together, whether he wants some help, because we know our good friend Joe Finity, don't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Recruitment.
Yeah.
Because I spoke to her and she said, oh, I can find your dad something, Ed. Get me a CV. So I asked him, and he's like, oh, I don't know, there's no rush. No rush. So I need to give him a shove.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the idea, and I suppose this is a passion of mine, of lifelong learning. At the moment, I'm doing a course with Yale in the States.
Yeah.
Distance learning with Coursera, which is about morality, philosophy and psychology of morality,
mm-hmm.
Which to me is fascinating. So in my busy schedule, what happens is I take the iPad into the shower room. So I've got the iPad going whilst I'm getting ready in the morning.
You've got that in the shower, I've seen.
You know, just at the side of the shower.
Yeah.
No water damage on it. For me, there's a continual learning process and life in that sense of continual learning.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure about concepts like retirement.
Yeah.
I think that maybe we can change what we do with our day, and maybe we're not doing things that are giving us dosh necessarily, but we're still engaged in life, and that's passion. It's maybe when we disengage we lose the passion.
That's an interesting case actually, because I think he was worried that once he got out of his job, which was a Monday to Friday 9-to-5 gig, or 9-to-6 it quite often ended up, he'd struggle to fill his days, and he'd be kind of moping around the house, but he's actually filling them quite well. He loves cycling, that's a passion of his, so he's been out on his bike a lot, even through the winter, and he's in a choir, he sings in a choir with some pals, which he's practicing that every day. So in that sense, maybe he feels that some people are kind of looking at him thinking, oh, that Chris, he's not up to much, is he? He's not making anything, but No, he's probably living his passion more now than ever.
Yeah,
which is the whole point.
That's the key, isn't it? Doing things, engaging.
Indeed. Now, there's plenty of resources out there. This isn't the resource of the week section, I should add.
No.
But there's loads of passion books, aren't there? And, well,
everything from the Secret.
We're not talking about love, passion here, by the way. No. There are plenty of books on that topic as well.
Yeah. Yes. I've got one.
Just one.
Things like The Secret
are
about how do you tune in. And lots of controversy about that. And Rhonda Byrne has gone on to do it's The Power and The Magic.
Yep.
Are the other two that she's done from that, which are all good. They're all good books. And I just love all the work of people like Bob Proctor, Joe Vitale.
Those guys, they're a cool bunch, aren't they?
Yeah. John Assaraf. They all do good stuff. Because they make you think.
Yeah. But is there a danger that too much self-help can just get in the way of just getting the work done?
Yeah, but it's that thing that we said before about you can go around someone's house and the bookshelves are full of self-help books and the DVD cases full of them and the CDs, they've got them all, and their life doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that trick about the information in a book and the power that it has doesn't come to you by osmosis from the book. You actually have to engage in the book, read the book and do the things that it says. And if you don't do it, then it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how many books you buy.
I think you're better off in some ways just buying one good self-help book and reading it over and over.
Yeah, like ours.
Yeah, get Live in the Present and just read it 10 times and it'll sink in.
Yeah, I think that's true, is that sometimes you will read a book 100 times and why would you keep reading the book? And the thing is that when you read the book and you change, what you get from the book and what you see in the book is different. So each time you read it, it's like reading a new book.
Mm-hmm.
It is reinforcing basic points, but it's things that we don't see because we're too busy, our mind's too busy somewhere else.
Yeah. A couple of books that I've read over and over, probably 100 times, are quite recently One Mole Digging a Hole and Where is Sassoon? There's this book called Where is Sassoon that my son just is obsessed with, and you've got to find Sassoon. He's a snake, and he's hidden on every page somewhere. And it's cool, you're right. Every time you look at it, I see something new. Like there's a mouse hiding in the corner there.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I'm not sure what I'm learning from it.
It's weird with books. If you have an audio book, say, and you listen to it in the car, you listen to it 100 times, and people say, why do you keep listening to that book? And yet they would listen to the same piece of music 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the same song, same symphony, same orchestral, whatever. You know,
true.
And it's because they get things from it. And in that way, the words that people use, or the cadence of the words, can be as soothing.
Mm.
There's a guy called Martin Jarvis.
Yep.
And he's a fabulous storyteller. You know, he tells other people's stories, but the way he presents them. And there's some P.G. Woodhouse stuff, the Wooster and Jeeves stuff I was listening to. And the way that he says the words, it was almost like musical. Like a cadence of the...
Mm.
Yeah? And there's a lot in spoken word for me like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a passion of mine. A passion of mine is listening to or reading really, really good stories. I like good storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I imagine, has all sat around a fire in previous generations, you know, around the campfire, people telling stories and being engaged in this. Because when a story takes you away in your imagination, and the pictures in your head are always much better than you get on the television or the...
I know.
Yeah.
It's funny, obviously media has changed a lot over the last couple of 100 years, but have you ever been to a big art gallery, or any art gallery? But the one I'm thinking of is one in Madrid, what I went to.
Prada.
Yeah.
Yes.
They've got some awesome...
Prada.
La Prada, I think it is.
Yeah.
But some Bosch paintings there.
Yeah, yeah.
You can just stare at them for hours because there's so much going on. And that was the cinema of that era.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people would have just gone just to stare at this thing, you know.
Yes, yeah. And it was photography. It was everything, wasn't it? It was a portrait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, amazing. Immerse yourself in that kind of thing. I want to mention, I've talked about this book quite a bit before. If Kevin hasn't read this one, then he needs to get on it. It's The 4-Hour Work Week.
Yeah.
And that book talks a lot about... by Tim Ferriss. who retweeted me last night. Yes.
Yes. You're famous.
He retweeted like 500,000 people I went out to last night. Amazing.
Yeah. Can I have your autograph?
Then? Yeah, that's kind of that's a little tick in my life goal box. Yeah. But yeah, The 4-Hour Workweek was his first book, and that spends a lot of time early on talking about how you can engineer a way out of your current job and getting into this other line of work to make a living. So get on The 4-Hour Workweek, Kevin, if you haven't already, because it's a top-notch book. Really practical. Love and it's it. Like, do this, do that, no faffing around, just get it done. And it also talks about how you can kind of manage your work situation, so rather than just having to quit your job and go straight in, it kind of suggests techniques for kind of trying to persuade your boss to let you go down to 4 days a week initially, so you can spend more time outside. You don't have to say what you're doing outside, but building up the other side of your life.
There's another book that I like by Gerber, which is The E-Myth Revisited, and he explains why people like McDonald's are so successful, because of the way that they work. And it's really useful when you're starting an enterprise to get it right from the beginning. And he's very clear on that, on how you do things and make it work for you. So that's the one I'd...
The E-Myth.
E-Myth Revisited. Is the
I think I've read that one a while ago, but that's a good one. And in terms of articles as well, it's the good old Top 5 Regrets of the Dying article, which just... states it plain and clear that you can't afford to muck around in life doing something that you're not finding fulfilling, because there's going to come a point in life, and it may come in the coming weeks, months, it might be 50 years down the line, but it's going to come, and you're going to look yourself in the mirror, aren't you?
Yeah.
And say, have I led a fulfilling life? Have I been of value to...
It's the phrase I hear over and over is, if only... You know, and that's either why didn't I or why did I?
Yep.
Yeah. Which is, that's sad. That's sad to work with. But that is people really buying into other people's passions and not living their own. Yeah.
Get to work.
Yeah.
Is a, well, that's a bit, Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. What an article, man.
Yeah. I guess the other big issue that comes up when you're looking at all this kind of stuff is money. Is the dosh thing.
No, it's a real issue, isn't it?
Yeah. And there is a but in that for me, which is that the money that you have or the money that you create has to be the byproduct of you fulfilling your passion. If we start to focus on the money itself, we lose the sense of passion.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there must be some people who the money is the passion, but for most people it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they get sidetracked, get sidelined into it. So I will work with people who in retirement have a stack of money, have a load of money, and are really unfulfilled and don't know what to do with their lives.
Mm.
Yeah, and everything's been focused around the money, maybe even to the cost of relationships and stuff like that. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Not good.
And in terms of like money as an issue in terms of debt that you may have hanging over you, I mean, that's not something you really want to mess around with, especially if you've got a family on the go as well.
Yeah.
But is it just a case of planning it out and...
But Tim Ferriss in the 4-Hour Workweek, he suggests that you accumulate a year's dosh, so to give you the freedom to break out.
Yeah, so that you're not immediately under a load of pressure.
Yeah, which is very different to being in debt, it's the other way around. But one of the things in that, I suppose... If I look at people that I work with who make the transition from being wage slaves to being driven by the passion, they have to slide on it. They have to work their way from one to the other. And that may be a gradual process. And some people will always maintain some kind of paid employment, even if it's a couple of days a week.
Yeah.
And go and do other things the rest of the time.
Sure. You know? Maybe take a part-time gig somewhere.
Yeah. And from that point of view, multiple streaming of income is never a bad issue. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I often think about that myself. I mean, I don't get to interact on a daily basis with people, like, which I kind of miss. And I've often thought about getting a part-time job at somewhere like the Coffee Co. up the road where we go networking.
Yeah.
Just because it's...
Yeah.
I think it'd be really cool just to work somewhere like that and just chat with people and just engage.
You know, when we went to a gig in Liverpool and we went to visit Liam's... all the studios being converted, so there's lots of people working in a studio.
Yeah, that's cool.
Would an environment like that work for you?
Yeah, I've thought about that, like a shared workspace.
Yeah.
There's loads of places like that I can go and work I don't know why I've resisted up till now. Yeah, but that'd be pretty cool. Yeah. And I actually do work now one day a week at there's a company that nearby that I've been doing a lot of work with and for. And they're another bigger designers and they're kind of passing work my way, so I'm working with them one day a week in their office and working on other stuff at the same time. But that's been good fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you miss people in doing what you're doing?
A little bit, yeah.
I suppose because my work is people, that sometimes there's times when I need to be alone.
Yeah, well, do you miss a bit of solitude? You kind of like my setup?
Yeah.
I just get to sit on my own all day.
Yeah, no, there's times when to just be alone, especially if I'm writing or something like that, is just have space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting. And some last few tips here. I mean, I think I mentioned this already, but in Kevin's situation, you need maybe speak to other photographers that have made the leap or are doing things that he wants to be doing, either working in his area or not. Just the web makes it wonderful, easy to connect with people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ask questions and get some advice. Yeah.
I guess when you look at something like photography too, it's such a massive area and the specialisation of different kinds of photography.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's industrial, whether it's weddings or
babies
or whatever it is.
Reach out to me, Kev, on Twitter, and we can have a little chat if you want. But put you in touch with my business partner. But lots to think about. But don't let life carry you along anymore, pal.
Yeah, in terms of the self help part of this, for me, it's always about doing things that make you feel good.
Mm.
So that the issue has to be, what is it that makes you feel good? And that's the easiest way to begin to dig into your passion.
Yeah.
Yeah, what makes you feel happy. And there's two things in that. There's two bits of the brain. There's the bit which creates the dopamine, which is the woo bit. I love that. Yeah, and then there's the serotonin bit, which is the bit. And it's okay going for the dopamine, but you can't sustain it. You know, you have to get something that gives you enough serotonin to give you that continual feeling of well-being, because you can't live in that woo state all the time. But that's what people want to drive for.
Yeah.
It's okay having periods of woo, periods of yeah, but you have to have a lot of good, solid well-being in it.
Sure.
Yeah. So don't be fooled as you're looking at what you really like, as to look at it in terms of things that give you that real high, because that can be short-lived.
Yeah, we can't all be Formula One drivers.
Yeah.
Can we?
Yeah.
Much as I'd love to be one.
But even the Formula One driver is only on the woo when he's in the car.
Mm.
And how much of his life is in the car? Yeah, it has to be the rest of it.
A few hours every fortnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it has to be, and that's the serotonin bit. That's the bit that has to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
Yeah, well-being. So I suppose that's a bit like you saying that actually 25% of your time is in the design and the woo, and the rest of it is in the backup and the fulfilling part.
True. Yeah. Interesting, Sean, interesting. Yeah. Okay, any more tips out there, or should we...
Well, just last bit. If you're thinking about what is it that makes people feel happy and good, learn to observe the people around you. Around you, there's going to be a whole range of people. There's going to be the people that wake up and moan about everything from morning till night, and there's going to be the people that are just so happy. And if you observe them, and maybe if you can ask them a few questions, you start to become aware of what it is. What are the fundamental attitudes in this person that makes them feel so good?
Yeah.
Because if someone is feeling good, they're feeling the passion of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I suppose the other side of that is, if you become aware of yourself and you start to look at yourself, then you can become aware of what are the bits in any one day that make you feel good. And you may not be aware of them now.
Sure.
But maybe there's a certain person you're sat with that gives you a good feeling. What's that about? You know, maybe there's certain bits of your day that make you feel good, or something you watch on the telly makes you feel good. And if you start to tune into those bits, you're going to get deeper down into the things that fulfil you.
Sure. Yeah. Good advice to you. I like doing that. And I'll quickly move on that sense to my results of the week.
Yeah.
Which I like watching people online chat about things that they're passionate about. So there's loads of stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
My current obsession is watching a series of roundtable interviews by The Hollywood Reporter. It's a magazine.
Yep.
But they get people from the film biz round at table chatting about their line of work. So there's there's the actors one, there's actresses, and there's directors, writers, like really high profile ones. So the actors one I've watched has got like Richard Gere and Denzel Washington and who else is around the table? Matt Damon. So all these real high powered film stars, but all kind of on a level playing field, just chatting about their love of their art, you know, their art form.
Yeah.
Like same with the directors one. So it's just amazing. So I'll put a link on the website to a couple of those interviews because it's just amazing watching these people.
What's that called again?
The Hollywood Reporter.
Hollywood Reporter. Yeah.
Yeah. If you put that into YouTube, you should find all these interviews. There's loads. Yeah. There's loads of them. Really, I'm just working my way through. But
Things like all the TED Talks. I've very rarely watched a TED Talk that didn't make me go, ooh.
Mm.
Yeah, and didn't connect with something. Yeah. They are good. They're good.
What about you?
I got two books up here. I mean, I've said the Attractor Factor by Joe Vitale, which is something that I do use a lot with people. And what it does is it makes you focus down into things that are important to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really, really good. And there's two other books that do the same thing. One is seeing as we're talking about passion, one's called The Passion Test, which is really, really good as well.
We'll
put the link up for that, yeah.
We will.
And the other one is a Jack Canfield book, which is The Key to the Secret. And obviously, Jack was on the Secret DVD.
Yeah.
I think, like most people, and I'm putting words in his mouth here, I think, like most people, he realised the shortcomings of the presentation of the DVD and has done lots of other stuff on top of that to get further into it. And one of the things I'd mentioned that he does in The Key, which I use a lot, is he uses a T-diagram. You see it in different places, but he does it quite well in the book. You've got a T-diagram of things that you do like and things that you don't like. And because people say to me, I don't know what I want, I don't know what I want to do, so I start off with the other side, which is, OK, what is it that you don't want to do? What makes you unhappy? Yeah. And then you can start to work one to the other. So let's say that I've got a woman who's looking for a partner but doesn't know what she wants. So I say, OK, tell me what you don't want. And she'll say, I don't want someone who snores. Which is on the negative side, which means that automatically on the positive side, she's looking for somebody who, fairly fit, non-overweight, doesn't smoke, doesn't drink too much.
Yep.
Yeah, so she's by looking at what you don't want, you can start to create a list of what you do want. And that's a really useful exercise.
Clever. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's in that book, which is good.
Jack Canfield. Yeah, I like that guy. Cool. Yeah. Cool fella.
Good.
I think we're all done, Sean.
Yeah, that's cool for me. That's good.
Let's go off and be passionate.
Yes, yeah. So what are you going off to be passionate about?
Web design.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good passion.
Yeah. And Bitcoin. My Bitcoin obsession increases. And I'm reading a lot about that as well, which is quite interesting, trying to get my head around it. Steep learning curve, but it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've mentioned lots of links and lots of books and resources. Go to our website, livingthepresent.co.uk. Find this week's episode link and you'll find all the links right there. If you're on our email list, you'll have them sent to you straight away, so you've got them there and then. If you want to get on the email list, enter your address on our website and we'll send you a load of free goodies as well.
Yeah.
We're nice, aren't we? We're nice,
yeah, we are. We're cool.
Very nice. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. And yeah, if you could share this show with someone, if you like it and you think you know someone else that might enjoy it, just fire the link on someone and say, have a listen.
And keep the emails coming. It's very we do reply to them all. And it's great to hear what's going on for people and how the podcasts affect them. It's good.
Yeah.
So keep talking.
Have you caught up with your emails yet?
Yeah, I am. I'm up to date.
You're up to date.
Yeah, I'm good.
Good man.
Yeah.
So we'll leave it there. Sean, you have a good week.
And you take care.
See you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.